September 27th in the Sefer Rabbi Adler Shiur.
Next Wednesday, Mr. Shem, is Erev Sukkot, so if you want to come and learn, that's your business, but I won't be here, and I don't think there'll be any shiurim that day on Erev Chag, and so too the Erev Chag of Simchat Torah, which is Hashanah Rabbah, there won't be shiurim, so our next year is going to be essentially in 3 weeks from today. Exactly what this subject, I'm still pondering whether to continue with Rambam Sefer Mitzvot, because we've done justice to it the past year, but certainly have not exhausted it. There's still what to do, or we'll move over to another theme. So you'll just have to bear with me for another till I decide, and it might be in the Torah Tidbits the next issue. It may not be. I'm not sure. I know there's one more Torah Tidbits issue between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, coming out for Yom Kippur and Sukkot. I'm not sure there's going to be another one for Parashat Bereishit, which is just a day after Simchat Torah. So that Wednesday is a free-for-all in terms of the topics, but I'll come with a topic already, and we'll have an enjoyable, hopefully enjoyable learning season this coming year. I'm just looking around just to make sure that no one here was in Ol Nechama programs, learning program Monday night, which was in Hebrew. And the reason is because I want to repeat some of the things that I did at that shiur that were nicely developed, and there were some chidushim. And I took note as to, we had a nice crowd. We had the chief rabbi, Rabbi David Lau, was there, and the other people spoke. But I addressed the issue of Tana Tokef. And I did look around to see if any of our Wednesday regulars were there before deciding that, because I had to, various options, and I feel I just want to do this. So I'm glad that nobody was there. So my father once told me, and even if they were there, 2 days later, some of them may not have remembered it. But that's okay. I have derech eretz for the crowd. We will speak about what I consider the centerpiece poem of Musaf of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Unetana Tokef Kedushat Hayom. Many of us know, if not the whole Unetana Tokef by heart, certainly phrases that are very popular, that are sung in shul. Shlomo Kalbach composed an absolutely gorgeous niggun to one section of Unetana Tokef, Kivakarat Roe Edro Madvir Tzano Tachat Shifto, which many shuls, the Balei Tefillah and Chazanim, do the second part of it, which allows congregational participation. It's a beautiful piece. The only thing is they don't do the first part, which is very, very cantorial, and certainly does not lend itself for congregational participation. Great Chazonim, like Moshe Kozovitsky and others, had compositions on Unetana Tokef, Yossel Rosenblatt, and so on. But these are not household tunes. But nevertheless, the poem itself became so popular and so significant that in spite of the objections of the Vilna Goin, the Goin of Vilna, Rabbi Leo from Vilna, who died just a little over 200 years ago in Vilna, as we mentioned on more than one occasion, the Vilna Goin was not a Rav in town, and he was not a Rosh Hashiva. He was the Vilna Goin sitting at home. And if not for the fact that he had a few students who would come to his house and study Torah and exchange ideas and ask questions to him, and ultimately the Vilna Goin giving the blessings to the development of the first Lithuanian yeshiva of modern days, the yeshiva of Volozhin, in 1902. If not for that, the Vilna Goin may have passed into oblivion. So much so. Because somebody who does not publicly teach Torah, does not have a core of students who are out there to spread the word, it just doesn't happen. And the Vilna Goin didn't write books either. So if you don't write Svarim, and you don't have students doing the job for you, you may be a great individual in your time, but nobody really is going to know about it 100 years later. But the Vilna Goin had that fortune that one of his students, who's known as Reb Chaim from Volozhin, he's the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, And he had some students who the Vilna Gaon encouraged to come to Eretz Yisrael 200 years ago. And this became the core, the nucleus of the Prushim here in Yerushalayim. And today they can be located in Shari Chesed, 5 minutes walk from where we're sitting right now. And that's why there's the Vilna Gaon Shul in the Shari Chesed neighborhood. The Vilna Gaon was of the opinion that add-ons in the Chazarat Hashatz, in the repetition of Shmon Esrei, are inadmissible. Our Chazal, our sages have taught us that kol ha-mishaneh mimadbeya shetavu chachamim bebrachot, a line that's found in Masechet Brachot Tachmem. If you detract, if you somehow change the exact language, the formulation, this is a modern Hebrew phrase as well, matbeya lishoni, comes from the word coin, coined language. If you deviate an iota from the coined language, the exact words that Chazal used in Brachot and Tefillah, the Gemara says, Toeh, you are in error, and there's a machloket, the dispute between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, if you have to repeat the Bracha, or repeat the Tefillah, or we let it go, but don't do it again. But don't do it again. That's the machloket. How severe is deviating from the exact language of the Chachamim. The question was, do additions to the text constitute a deviation? A person is saying exactly what Chazal said to say. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avoteinu Elokei Abraham Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov until Melech Hosea Mashiach Magen, said everything that Chazal said, and he's going to say Baruch Ata Hashem Magen Abraham. It's just that now we're going to add a few lines. That's all. There's no change in the language of Chazal. But the Vilna Gaon was of the opinion that even these additions constitute deviation. Because Chazal coined the language as a very compact structure. And therefore, by expanding it artificially with poetry, you have deviated from the language of Chazal. The Vilna Gaon's opinion was not the rank and file popular opinion for 1,000 years in Ashkenaz. Not before him and not after him. The Vilna Gaon was the Vilna Gaon, and in Volozhin, in 1902, they had the minhag, the custom of the Vilna Gaon. 1802, I'm sorry, correction. 200 years ago, 1802. Correct. Thank you, Jane. 1802, the last 200 years. But you have to understand that the yeshivot in Lithuania, whether it was the prime yeshiva, Volozhin, and then the subsequent yeshivot, whether it was in Mir or Kamenets or Ponevich or Radin or Grodno, and these are the famous names that we are familiar with, some of the great Rosh Yeshiva who we grew up with, the Chofetz Chaim, Reb Shimon Shkop. I mean, these are big names in the world of yeshiva, but it all hails from Volozhin. These yeshivas were spiritual cocoons, did not impact, neither did they nurture from the local custom of the town, nor did they impact on the local custom on the town. They were insulated. And this was done, by the way, to protect the dignity of the local Rav. I wish Rosh Yeshiva today would remember that their task as Rosh Yeshiva is to teach the students how to understand the page of Gemara and not to challenge the authority of the local Rav. But that's, you know, I'm a member of the union, you know, so there's a history to this as well. But the fact is that the reason why many of the customs of the Vilna Gaon, which differed sometimes even radically from the Ramor, Rav Moshe Isserles from Krakow, 16th century, who really sets the tone for Minhag Ashkenaz today, the reason that it became so popular is because post-World War II, with the collapse of Jewish communities in Europe and the reconstitution of shul communities with shul rabbis and so on, but nothing in an organized fashion in most of the world. In England you have, and here in Eretz Israel you have an organized rabbinate. Nevertheless, people who were saturated with Torah were products of yeshivot, not of rabbonim. And hence, these yeshivot impacted tremendously now on the minhag of communities as well. And here in Eretz Yisrael, when the students of the Vilna Gaon arrived, there was a vacuum of Ashkenazi custom. Because what you had in Eretz Yisrael in the 16th century was Sfaradim, the exiles from Spain, like Rabbi Yosef Karo and the likes in Tzfat. In the 18th century, there were two migrations, not big migrations, but representations of Ashkenazi Jewry that do hit the map of Eretz Yisrael, and each one has its own history. One was the brother-in-law of the Baal Shem Tov, who's known as Rabbi Avram Gershon from Kitov, or more popularly known as Rabbi Gershon Kitova. In my family, we have a particular affinity, special attachment, because he happened to be my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Ben Achar Ben. I'm 10th generation of Rabbi Gershon Kitova, and he came to Eretz Yisrael to spread Chassidut of his brother-in-law, the Baal Shem. But he brought along Minhag Ashkenaz that was already adjusted with Kabbalistic teachings, what we call in shuls Nusach Sfarad, not Sfaradi, not Eidot HaMizrach, Nusach Sfarad. This is Nusach Sfarad. But at the same time came some students of the Vilna Gaon to Eretz Yisrael, and they also found a vacuum of Ashkenazi Minhag. So what becomes the Minhag when it's a vacuum? Your Minhag becomes the Minhag. And specifically here in Yerushalayim. And that's why there are certain things we do here in Yerushalayim that are different than in other places. But just give you one good example of a minhag in many shuls in Yerushalayim, that throughout the world we do things differently that are relevant to our discussion. Tfilat Geshem, coming up on Shmini Atzeret, and then Tfilat Tal, the first day of Pesach. Rabbi Elazar Kalir, the great poet of Eretz Yisrael, 7th century. 7th century, Eretz Yisrael. Although there are some who claim dates back to the days of the Tanaim, the writings of the Mishnah. And there are those who claim he's later, the beginning of the medieval Rishonim, 11th century. So you have conjecture. But the overwhelming sentiment, he's a 7th century personality. And Rabbi Elazar Kalir authors many, many of the religious poetry that we use for Slichot, for Kinot on Tisha B'Av, and for the tefillot. So, at least I grew up in a shul where I had a machzer that was from the Hebrew Publishing Company, the Lower East Side. Remember that? Essex Street, Delancey. Delancey, not far from the pickle store, right? I mean, I love Eretz Yisrael, but they don't know how to make a pickle, you know? It's true, right? Right? So, now we're going to get into Essex and the Lancy. So my machzer, and I still have it home, with shredded pages, and it has Yiddish translation of the machzer. The Gemara, the Yiddish translation. Because, you know, obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah in Yiddish, and everything was in Yiddish. Bezeder. So there, it's full of piyutim. Not just for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, add-ons. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. And certain sidurim that we used had piyutim for Musaf and Shacharit, for Parshat Shkalim and Parshat Achodesh, and for Musaf and for Shacharit, for Parshat Zachor and Parshat Parah, extras, add-on, yaitzrut, we'd call them, yaitzrut. And some shuls went, you know, the full distance, the full mile, and for Ma'ariv on Yom Tov, they called it Ma'aravit, they had extra poems stuck into all the brachot of Shema, before and after. Tremendous amount of poetry that was written. Vilna Gaon, you know, pushed the delete button on all of them. You don't have to say any of this. These are expansions. Now, almost not out of deference to the Vilna Gaon, but because of it just became too tedious, especially when people realized they didn't understand a word they were saying, because this is very difficult Hebrew. It is Hebrew that the poet uses poetic language to adjust words, so even if the principal word you know, but now the way it's found in context, you don't have a clue what he's saying. And you have to be an expert in Tanakh, how they very, very cunningly play with psukim, and mamarei chazal, you have to be an expert in medrash. It's very difficult to explain this. And that's why Rabbi Avraham Soloveitchik spent so much time on Tisha B'Av explaining the keynote, and during Shurim explaining Slichot. So we should have a clue All right, so today it's a little bit easier because we have English translations already, and we have commentary, you know, shot, there's art school. It's the situation is better today than it ever was. But it became so tedious that many shuls, they dropped this and they dropped that, and they started abbreviating the piyutim. And you see that some machzorim, they put some of the piyutim, like in the Rinat Yisrael, in the back of the machzor, which means nobody's going to look at it, right? But they just play it safe. They didn't eliminate it. They put it in the back. But what was the criteria that this part of the piyut you say and that part you don't say? Very simple. In the previous generations, machzorim, if they printed it in bold print, we say it. If they printed it in small letters, we don't say it. Who said the bold print and the small letters have any difference? It's an indication that people didn't have a clue what they were saying. To go even further, that I showed in my Shabbat Shulchan Drasha this year, that three piyutim, or three sections of one piyut, in Musaf of Yom Kippur, right before Magen Avraham, right before Mechayim Etim, and right before Yimloch Hashem Lolam Malayach Zion, most shuls will say the first part, the second part, and leave out the third. Why? Kacha. Kacha. You know what kacha means? Kacha is a... In kindergarten, a kid that tells the ganenet kacha, the kindergarten teacher responds, kacha is a lo tshuva. Kacha is not an answer. But she's wrong. I said it here once. Ashrei ha'am she kacha lo. You see, it's the nation. Our nation is a nation of kacha. Kacha. There's no idea why. Somehow they printed that third section a little bit smaller print. And they jump right away. Yim lo hashem lo lo. One second, why not say the third? Take a look what the three stanzas are telling you. One has the name of Yom Kippur as Yom Kippur, one has the name of Yom Kippur Shabbat Shabbaton, and one has the name of Yom Kippur Tzom He'asar. And then, afterwards, he spells it out. And we actually say this, Ne'ach HaShev, Kitzak Be'itom, Dechot Pifilulei Akalaton, V'naktishach B'Shabbat Shabbaton, Kadosh. And the next line, V'naktishach, Betzom Asor Kadosh, and then the next line, Be Yom Kippurim Kadosh. We say all three. We acknowledge their three names. And this was like the end of Kalir, summing up three stanzas. So stanza one and two we say, it's three we don't say. I tell my Shechazan Ishul, of course we say it. What's the question? It's not a question. If you begin to understand what you're saying, you say it. If you don't want to say either or any of them, fine, don't say any of them. But if you want to say it already, say it all. So Vilna Gaon was against all of this, because he said it was a hefsek. It was an interruption. Of kolam shanem mimapeya shetavu chachamim bebrachot. Any addition, according to the Vilna Gaon, equals deviation. And deviation is intolerable. Okay? Our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik said, and he grew up in this environment of Voloshin, subsequent Brisk, that they held minhag agro, the Vilna Gaon's custom throughout in so many areas of halacha. And indeed, for the Chagim, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and the Arba Parshiot, Shkalim, and so on, they never said Yotzrot or Piyutim. But he said on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, how can you daven without the Piyutim? You're going to miss the whole point. What Al-Azhar Kalir and other poets did here was they defined the sanctity of the day, the Kedushat Hayom. How can you go through a Musaf of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur without unatana tokef kedushat hayom? Tokef means the force, the definition. We will now give you the essence. Unatana tokef kedushat hayom. Would you like to know something about the essence of the sanctity of the day? Ki hu nora v'ayom. You get the chills just when you say it. Ki hu nora v'ayom. Ubo tinasei malchutecha v'ikon b'chesed kis'echa. It's the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ascends the throne. And there are two words now with an interplay which are important. Chesed and Emet. They are two of the 13 attributes of Shlosh Esrei Midot. Rav Chesed ve'Emet. And they seem to contradict. Because as Emet, nobody's going to make it through Yom HaDin. As the Paitan goes on to say, the Malachim are in a panic. Malachim yechafezun. Chil urada yochezun. Chil. What is the word chil? Frightening. One of the introductory piyutim that the Chazan says on Rosh Hashanah and Shacharit, where you just get started, every phrase ends with the word chil, atchil, chil, chil, and that's what you hear. And that's what's supposed to be emphasized. You're shaking, shaking, shaking. Chil ura'ada is translated as the name of the book of Soren Kierkegaard, not a Jewish philosopher, but the Rav loved what he had to say about the Akedah, fear and trembling. Chil ura'ada. Yochezun. V'yomru, hine yom adin. Hine yom adin. Lifkod atzva marom badin. Ki lo yisku b'necha badin. Nobody's going to come out. You know, acquitted. Nobody. And this is similar to what we say, ki lo yisku b'necha badin, on Rosh Hashanah in the Piyutim. El ke'erkecha b'orach adin, im timatzei omek adin, mi yitzdak lefanecha badin, kadosh. If Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to judge us by judgment, by the book, nobody's coming out okay. That's a net. But we have the great fortune that Kadosh Baruch Hu attaches Rav Chesed to the picture. As a Rav Chesed, he's an Erech HaPayim. He's patient with us. And he may not mete out the full punishment. Why? Aleph, because he's a Rachaman, he's compassionate. Two, he took note that we took a step in the right direction. Doesn't mean we became super duper tzaddikim on Rosh Hashanah, but we took a step in the right direction. That's helpful. We've bottomed out, and now we're in upswing. That's important. And in the Tana Tokef, Utshuva, Utfila, Utzdaka, Ma'avirin et roa hagzera, usually interpreted, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will dismiss or erase the evil decree. That's an inaccurate translation. It means ma'avirin et roa hagzera. Kadosh Baruch Hu will take the sting out of the gzera. That doesn't mean the edict that was supposed to befall a particular individual, it's not going to happen. There is a Kabbalistic notion called Hamtakat HaDin, sweetening the judgment. It's bad, but it could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. A lot worse. And we don't always know what could have been. We don't know. The year started off not so great in the area of security. Three security people were killed yesterday in Har Adar. One was Arab, but he died defending a yeshuv, a settlement in Eretz Yisrael. Abu Ghosh, Arabs in 1948, signed a blood contract with Am Yisrael here in Eretz Yisrael. They serve in the armed forces, they defend our country, and they died, and this fellow died in the defense of Am Yisrael and has to be remembered respectfully. And two Israelis fell as well. One happened to be an Ethiopian. What's the difference? One is in bad shape. We should be mitpalel. We should come out of it. And Adas ain't gone. But one thing we know, this was at a checkpoint where Palestinian workers are let in every day to go to work. And this fellow, with his work permit, on his way to go to work, the same place where he worked for several years in this yeshuv, and everybody knew him, 37-year-old, family man with four kids at home. So in this crossfire, a chayelet and a chayal, as we say, neutralized the terrorist. Neutralized, you know what it means, neutralized? I'm sure you all know what it means, neutralized. He's not going to get up again. Neutralized. He was neutralized permanently, right? And it was pointed out that if that would not have been done, had this chayal gotten through the first level of defense, which was the checkpoint, what could have happened in Har Adar? How many more people, innocent people, would have been slaughtered because he had on himself several rounds of ammunition to go around? So it was bad. And how can you say it could have been worse? Yes, it could have been worse. Four people could have been killed. 10 people could have been killed. You don't know. what the cheshbonot are, and how two chayalim saved the day in terms of saving lives of several other people, that has to be appreciated as well. Am takat adin. But maybe this is extreme. How about the person who gets hit in the car and it's a question of his, you know, we call pach, the got a dent in the car. And he's so angry because there's a guy who washes his car every Monday and Thursday and it's so perfect, scratch free. And now he's got a dent. And he's going to have it fixed, of course. They'll make it ki'ilu like new, but his premium, the insurance is going to go up. So it's a nezek. He's cursing the day. And the chutzpah, the guy didn't even leave a note. You know who he is? He's really, the ogmat nefesh is boiling over. How do you know that maybe a gzerah went out that you were going to be in a fatal crash? Or in a crash that would leave you debilitated for the rest of your life? And Kadosh Baruch Hu got you off the hook with a little bit of a pach? That's why we say kapara. Yeah. Ask anybody from North African persuasion. Kapara. Take it as kapara. Just 3 days ago, last week, my mother in the Neve Amid. So there's a woman sitting there who takes care of another woman. She lost her cell phone across the street in Ramat Eshkol, in the shopping center. Okay, lost her cell phone. She got home, she lives in Ramot. She gets a call from somebody. You know, if I see her cell phone and I figured out what the phone number, if there was some phone number on it, of course I would call. Shavat Aveda. Some woman calls her and says, I found your phone in such and such place. Okay, great. So how are we going to get back? So she doesn't live in Ramot. She says she has a friend in Ramot. So this woman says, you know what? Just do me a favor. Just go across the street. Give it to the shomer in Neve Amit, in the Beit Avot. And that's it. Finish. I'll pick it up tomorrow. Fine. End of telephone call. Of course, it's not there the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. So she's really upset because it's not that it's just a phone. It's her pictures, it's her contact numbers, it's everything. She's just a woman who's herself an almanah, and she just was lost without her phone. And I tried to do things. I tried to look in this store and that, so I tried to help her out wherever I could. And at a loss, I questioned other people in the Neve Amit. Maybe somebody came in at a different hour and brought it in. Gunish. Nothing. And I really saw that she was at a loss. Yesterday, one of the receptionists, she heard the story, she tells me, and this is the bracha in the Gemara, HaMakom Yemalei Chesronech. It sounds like Shiva. HaMakom Yenachem. And the Gemara says precisely, somebody takes a loss, and this tremendous Ogmat Nefesh, your Shor V'chamor, your ox or your donkey, so you give him a bracha. Kadosh Baruch Hu should replace your loss. That's the bracha. Makom Yomalei Chesroncha. So this woman gave such a bracha. Anyway, long story short, this woman, the owner of the phone, had a lead that maybe it might be in another store. And she actually went to another store in the shopping center, saw it on the table. The person there didn't want to give it to her even, thought it's time. She was just wanted to take a phone. She proved it was her phone. She got it back. Sometimes these things happen. She said it was Mikri, you know, coincidence. Nothing's coincidence. Nothing's coincidence. But before she got back, I tried to soothe her pain by saying, this is Rosh Hashanah. Who knows what a Kadosh Baruch Hu had in store? Who knows? And you're paying a little bit of a discounted price for a real gzeira. And we have to accept it as such. Utshuva utfila utzdaka ma'avirin et roa hagzera. It doesn't say Kadosh Baruch Hu will take away the whole gzera, but it'll take the sting out of the gzera. That we're willing. I remember when the Rav spoke about this concept, he gave a great example. He says, you have to make a bus, right? And you see the bus is at the station, and you're running for the bus because you know he's closing the doors, and you use the first word that you learned in Ulpan. Rega! The first word, right? And it was probably the last word. And Rega! And the driver pulls out. What a Rosha Marusha. I'm going to have to wait 10 minutes for the next bus. Maybe 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. And I have a dentist appointment. I have a fight, you know? And they're going to throw me out of the Yeti Society. Because I'm going to be late. You curse the day. Or you jump to a cab and it costs you 50 shekel instead of, you know, half price for retired people, right, on the bus. And you're upset. The Rav said, that's the Ogmat Nefesh that we're willing to accept on Yom Kippur. And we say it through every Shmon Esrei at the end. Elokai atcha lo notzarti eini kedai, v'ashav she notzarti kilu lo notzarti, afar ani b'chayai kal v'chomer b'mitati, yi ratzon f'nech Hashem Elokai shelo echete od, u'ma shechatati mechok b'rachamecha rabim, v'lo al yedei yisurim ra'im v'chalayim. Not by terrible, terrible yisurim. The Rav said, did you ever hear of yisurim tovim? Why does it say yisurim ra'im? That adjective is unnecessary. If it's yisurim, it's already bad. So what is yisurim ra'im? The Rav said yisurim, without the word ra'im, is ogmat nefesh, is aggravations, the daily aggravations of life. That we're willing to accept. Kapara, that yes. But we beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo ayidei yisurim ra'im. Lo roa ha'gzera, take the sting out of the gzera. Now something very remarkably interesting. We say there's no such thing as coincidence. I have an acquaintance who happens to be he was a former rabbi in Teaneck, and he's the chairman of Jewish studies at Stern College, Rabbi Professor Ephraim Karnefogel, very fine Talmud Chacham, a very gifted scholar, but I discovered that he's also a Navi. How's he a Navi? I had to send him a request of something. And I have a colleague of this stature, so after the letter's over, you attach a little Dvar Torah that you wrote or printed somewhere. It's a nice thing to do, and of course, I didn't think he needed to hear my Dvar Torah, but I knew he was going to send me at least one, two, three, or four of his articles, and that's a great thing, because he's a great scholar. So of course, he sent me three articles, and one of them he writes to me, and one you'll find of particular interest, because it has something to do with the Natana Tokef. It's timely. So I wrote him back. I said, now I know you're a Navi. This was on Monday when I spoke about Natana Tokef at Ol Nechama. Did you know that I was going to speak about Natana Tokef? And I printed out the relevant page. The subject matter happens to be Shiduchim. And the Gemara tells us, Arbeim Yom Kodem Yitzirat Avlad, 40 days before the embryo is developing, 40 days before, Yotzeit bat kol, a heavenly voice goes out. Ben ploni lebat ploni. The shidduch is already a done deal. Who's marrying whom? Then there's a discussion. Is this only for first marriages, or is it also for second marriages? It's a serious discussion. Maybe a second marriage, because the first marriage it says bidei shamayim, second marriage bidei adam. My grandfather Shalom used to tell me something. And with his wisdom, he says, the reason why Chazal say that this is only, you have the heavenly help for the first time around, because you don't have any experience. So you need a Kadosh Baruch Hu to guide you. Second time around, you already have experience, you don't need him anymore, so you can do it by yourself. Bidei Adam. Okay, that was coming from where it was coming from. But it's interesting that some of the Rishonim say that this is even relevant for a second marriage. The divine help. So what's the issue here? Let's assume you see a shidduch brewing, right? You see this fellow is about to get engaged, or maybe even got engaged to a particular young lady. But you know that something's not right here, because you're an outsider. You're an outsider. Yeah, you don't want to, mish around. You don't want to start raising things. They're holding by getting engaged. They got engaged. Now, if you happen to have relevant information that was camouflage from one of the sides, then the Chofetz Chaim says this is not Lashon Hara. You have an obligation to speak up. You know that the boy, the girl at age 16 had a mental breakdown, was hospitalized. Now, thank God, they're functioning. Okay. And there's nothing wrong with that couple getting married, but there is something wrong of the party not informing the other party that there's a history here of mental illness or other type of illness in the family. You can't cover it up. It's important for that other person. You can't say, after 5 years of being married, why didn't you tell me? That is very important, putting information. But sometimes it can be even other things where you just don't think this is going to work. Too much of a clash. Too much. So the question is, are you allowed to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should arrange the situation that the shidduch breaks up? It's an interesting question. You think it's for the good of both the boy and the girl that those two should not marry. You honestly, there's no jealousy here. It's just mamash l'shem shemayim. You think it's just they're looking for trouble. There's not going to be a happy marriage here. So Rabbi Hashem, somehow use your tricks to somehow create a scenario that it breaks up. That's all. Are you permitted to offer such a tefillah? What's the basis of the question? The Mishnah tells us in the end of Masechet Brachot, there's a concept called tefillat shav, a prayer in vain. Classic example of a tefillah in vain is I hear an ambulance coming down the block, stopping in front of a house of people who you know, and you say, and you know you have somebody who, very close relative, whatever, a good friend, and you ask Kadosh Baruch Hu, it shouldn't be that person. That's a tefillat shav. Why? What do you want the Kadosh Baruch Hu to do? If that person had a heart attack, if that person, whatever happened that needed an ambulance, the event already is behind us. You cannot ask the Kadosh Baruch Hu to turn the clock back and make it that somebody else now has the heart attack for the ambulance to have come. That's called tefillat shav. It's a tefillah, a retroactive request. You can't do that. And according to some of the great poskim of Middle Ages, the Rishonim, if Ben Ploni, Lebat Ploni, was already divinely ordained, it's a done deal. And if it's a done deal, what are you going on davening? Kadosh Baruch Hu should bust it up. It's not going to happen. So Professor Kahnefogel shows that there are two strains in halachic thought on this question. Sfaradi and Ashkenazi. Sfaradi believe exactly the way I posited it now, you can't do a thing if the gzeira is already ordained. Nothing to do anymore. Hapur nafal. It already fell. The decision already was. It's a done deal. And you can't daven to undo it. And Ashkenazim say, you can. You can. In the context of the article, it has to do with shiduchim. But by extrapolation, it has to do with other things as well. Would a Sfaradi have ever said, Tshuva tfila utztaka ma'avirin et roa hagzera? Would he have ever said that tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah can undo something that's been decreed already? We know that Utan Tokev is an Ashkenazi composition and certainly conforms to Ashkenazi thinking that human beings can jolt a Kadosh Baruch Hu into action and have things changed. So that makes sense. Tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, mavirin et roach zerah. Now one second. Does that mean that the Rambam doesn't believe in tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah? I mean, he was a Sfaradi, no? So let's look at the source page. It's source number 6 and 7. In Hilchot Tshuva, Perek Gimel, Rambam says, "Mnei inyan ze nagu kol beit Yisrael laharbot betzedakah u'masim tovim v'lasot b'mitzvot b'rosh Hashanah ad Yom Kippurim yeter mikol Hashanah." ונהגו כולם לקום בלילה בעשרה ימים אלו להתפלל בבתי כנסיות בדברי תחנונים ובכיבושים עד שיור היום. Rambam says that in the עשרת ימי תשובה we should upgrade in tzedakah and in good deeds and we should daven more what we call slichot. The Rambam is talking about slichot. Get up early in the morning until the break of dawn. And in the next halakha he talks about the ways of a Baal Tshuva, Midarkei Tshuva, Liot Hashav, the person who's repented. So Eik Tamid Lefnei Hashem, Bebechu Yubitachnunim, Oset Tzedakah Kevikocho. Of course the Rambam's in favor of Tshuva, Tefillah, and Tzedakah. So would he have written such a phrase, Utshuva, Utfilah, Utzedakah, Ma'avirin et Roach Zera? So if you go back to source number 6, it begins with dot, 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 dot. This is in the middle of a sentence. And this is the problem of quoting out of context. What is the context? The context is, the Rambam says, that on Rosh Hashanah, Kadosh Baruch Hu judges every individual, he judges every region, geographic region, and judges the whole world. There are three judgments going on simultaneously. And the judgments are, what's the deal? You put on a scale. Zakai or Chayav. The mitzvah scale, the avera scale. On the individual level, on the regional level, he calls it Medina, and b'chein kol ha'olam kulo, the global level. It says, if there are more zchuyot than chovot, more mitzvot than averot on Rosh Hashanah, zakai, you're going to have a good year. You'll live and so on. On Rosh Hashanah, more avonot than mitzvot, you're not going to make it through the year. That's the gzeirah. But what if you happen to be exactly 50%, 50%? You're exactly what he calls benoni. You're on the midpoint. At the midpoint, what's a Kadosh Baruch Hu going to do? You have exactly 1,000 mitzvot and 1,000 averot on Rosh Hashanah. So you cannot have a decision. So lehavdil, what happens in basketball or football when you with this tie score? There's overtime. Overtime. Rambam says that a seret yemei tshuva is overtime. It gives you an additional section of time to tip the scale. So go for it. Laharbot b'tzdaka, laharbot b'mitzvot basim tovim, laharbot b'tfilah. Who is he talking to? He's not talking to somebody who ready on Rosh Hashanah, it's a done deal, either this way or that way. Because if it's a done deal, you can daven from Hank bis Morgan, from today to tomorrow, it's not going to help. What is all this upgraded tefillah and tshuva and tzedakah of Aseret Mei Tshuva is all about? It's for the individuals who happen to be exactly on the 50-50 line. And then the Rambam says, by the way, none of us really know what's going on in the fire. Nobody gets a moment to take a peek. So he recommends, don't think that you're a Rasha, because that's not healthy. But don't think you're a tremendous tzaddik. That's not so healthy either. Think that you're exactly on the midpoint. Now, statistically speaking, that can happen for a few individuals, right? One person's going to win the lottery. So how many people are going to be exactly 50% chayav, 50% zakai from all the Israel, from all the region, from the whole Medina, from the whole country? 0.00000001% of the population. But the Rambam says 100% of the population should think, that's where I am. And therefore, 100% of the population should utilize effectively Aseret Yemei Tshuva, because if you're in that scenario, in that situation, you have the ability to tip the scale with Tshuva, Tefillah, and Tzedakah. Why? Because there was no Gzeira yet. Kadosh Baruch Hu has got it all waiting till Yom Kippur. And we can turn it around. We can tip the scale. But if the person already at Rosh Hashanah, the gzeira went out, ein ma lasot, there's nothing to do. That is a Sephardi understanding. Ashkenazim think differently. That even if the gzeira was already inscribed, written, b'Rosh Hashanah yikatevun, but the Yom Tzom Kippur Yecha Teimun. Now, Rabbi Shalom is not writing, he's not sealing, he doesn't do these things. We do these things. So all this is poetic language for us to understand something. What's the difference between writing something or sealing it? Sealing it is, you pass the point of no return. Writing, you have an eraser. Writing, you can erase. That's all it means. That if it was written, Mi Yechem, Mi Yamut, Mi Bekitzom, Mi Lo Bekitzom, Mi Bamayim, Mi Baesh. It's reversible. It's all reversible. Clearly, this is an Ashkenazi presentation. Baksha Rivka.
We're part of the whole world. The whole world is not exactly an tzaddikim.
How do you know?
There's a lot of reshaim.
So there are a lot of reshaim.
What happens in the world?
There are a lot of reshaim.
So if they judge together with the whole world.
Right. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has different measuring systems. How he measures the world, how much expectation HaKadosh Baruch Hu has of the world, and how much expectation he has of Am Yisrael. So, if El Havdil, if you're a citizen of a country, but somebody else happens to be a parliamentarian, happens to be a minister, happens to be a prime minister, happens to be a president, so in a normal, moral, ethical society, you would expect more from the people on top. You should expect more. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects more, demands more from Klal Yisrael. We are Kohanim vis-a-vis the world. Vis-a-vis the world. Just as Kohanim, Kadosh Baruch Hu expects more from Kohanim than the rest of Am Yisrael. He has more mitzvot and more responsibilities. We, as opposed to the world, don't have seven mitzvot of Bnei Noach. And maybe if you take the seven mitzvot, if you look at the Encyclopedia Talmudit, you can see that it's expanded even to 30 mitzvot. Maximum listing of mitzvot of a goy is 30. We have 613. There's no comparison. So our responsibility is to carry everyone with us. So it's an awesome responsibility. Or lagoyim, ki hu ayom tenora. It's an awesome responsibility. Because as the Paitan tells us, there's a universal theme here. Because he says, v'chol ba'e olam ya'avun lefanecha kifnei maron. If you take a look at source number three. Source number three is the Mishnah Masechet Rosh Hashanah. That tells us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu judges the world four occasions. And with regard to wheat and grain, he's dealing with this on Pesach. This has a lot to do with the Korban HaOmer that's offered on Pesach. Barba prakim haolam nidon, Pesach al atua, atzeret al peirot ha'ilan, on fruits on Shavuot, atzeret min Shavuot, and we know the mitzvah of Bikurim kicks in on Shavuot. Rosh Hashanah kol ba'e olam ovrim lefanav kifnei maron. Now you see where the poet borrowed his language from. Right? He copied, lifted it straight out of this line of the Mishnah. Shneimar hayotzer yachad libam ha'mevinet kol ma'asehem. Uvechag, chag mitzchag ha'sukot, nidonim olamayim. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu take care of the water issues. That's why we have nisuch ha'mayim on the Mizbeach in Beit HaMikdash times. That's why we have Arba Minim, which the Gemara says is an indirect tefillah for water. That's why you have the addition of Mashiach Baruch Meregeshem. There's a dispute in the Mishnah whether we begin on the first day of Sukkot or the last day. So we do it on the last day in Shmini Atzeret. But it's all part of this Chag, Chag HaSukkot, Nidonim Alamayim. But getting back to Rosh Hashanah, Kol Ba'e Olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron. What is Kivnei Maron? So source number four, the Gemara tells us, Kol Ba'e Olam, there are various opinions to what, and I underlined one of them, the second line, Reish Lakish Amar, Ki Ma'alot Beit Maron. Rashi in source 5 explains this. Haderech Katzar, it's a very, very narrow way. Ve'ein Shnayim Yicholim Lelech Ze B'tzad Ze. You can't walk two file, one next to the other. That's how narrow this path is. It's single file. Single file. Sheha'emek Amok Mishnei Tzidei Haderech. The valley is very deep. It's like, it's a type of thoroughfare. You can pass it, but one at a time. One at a time. Two people side by side, you're going to fall. Not going to work. And that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu takes every single person in the world, finds the time on Rosh Hashanah. I guess that's why there's 2 days Rosh Hashanah now, right? Finds the time on Rosh Hashanah to examine individually everyone. The only human scene that I can somehow picture was when the Lubavitch Rebbe Zichron Lebracha was giving out dollars on Sunday morning. People single file lined up, and everybody got his 30 seconds with the Rebbe. Private audience in the presence of all. Private audience, 30 seconds of his undivided attention. And this is Kivnei Maron, according to this opinion that Rashi explains. Which means this is a universal idea. And actually brought the first two sources just to show how Chazal employed universal ideas into Rosh Hashanah experience. Because in the story of Sefer Shoftim Perikei, in the war of Sisra against Barak and Dvorah, so Sisra is ultimately killed by Yael. Okay, that's the story. You see it in the prose, then you see it in the song Shirat Dvorah that we use as the Haftarah for Parshat Bishalach, the flip side of Shirat Hayam of Azir Shir Moshe, Batashar Dvorah, we have the song of Dvorah. So there it says that the mother of Sisra was sitting by the window and waiting for her boyala to come home. You know, when I went out on dates and would come back 2 in the morning, well, I would always see the curtain move by. You did it also. Okay, fine, I got it. So my mother didn't have a patent on it. It's a kind of Jewish thing, right? But where did they learn it from? From the mother of Sisra. Va'ad ha'chalon nishkafa. She was looking outside the window and just waiting. When is my sister and my son coming home? He's the general, Betla. Certainly, he's the victorious general is going to come home. Vatiyabev Em Sisra. She's weeping and moaning. Ba'ad ha'eshnav, by the counter. Madua boshesh richpo lavo. Madua echeru pa'amei makorotav. I'm listening for the sounds of the chariots of his army. I hear nothing. Where are they? Where is he? Why is he late? Something terribly must have happened. And this is the cry of a mother, an enemy mother, but a sincere mother. And the Chazal say she cried 100 times, and against that cry we blow 100 sounds on Rosh Hashanah from our shofar, from here. So most of the Baalei Musar make a big to-do about this, that even a mother of the enemy, her cry is the cry of a natural mother, and we can all learn something from it. But beyond that, as you see how Chazal were interested in introducing a beyond Klal Yisrael theme into the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, into the mitzvah of Shofar. The Chol Ba'ei Olam Yavun Lefanecha Kifnei Maron. Everybody. So we said that this is a universal idea, and the idea of Teshuvah Tfilat Tzedakah Mavirin Et Ro'a Gzeira. So now is where the real interesting part comes up. 3 years ago, in Makor Rishon newspaper, a wonderful chokeret researcher, Shulamit Elitzur, published the following article. A Gniza fragment was found. Gniza, Cairo, 1890s. And the Gniza, Cairo Gniza, was what we call in Ashkenazi lingo, Seamus. But they didn't bury it. They would put it in the cracks of the walls, stuff it in the boidim on the roof. And when two nuns, Christian nuns, came across this in the old shul in Fostat, which is the old Cairo, they took a few fragments, brought them back to London, to Dr. Solomon Schechter, and immediately identified them. This is Kitfei HaKodesh. This is Yerushalmi. This is this. So they sent an expedition to clean out the boidim, and they brought it all back to Cambridge. And until this very day, more than 100 years later, most of the Gniza fragments have not yet been unveiled. That's how much there is there. But a Gniza fragment was found. I have a copy of it, which is almost illegible. Not going to help us a lot. And it's a copy of Piyutim from a 6th century Eretz Yisrael poet by the name of Yanai. He's a known personality, okay? We may not know him every day, but he's known in the world of Hebrew poetry, religious poetry. His name is Yanai. And it's an anthology of his poems. It was found in the Gniza. Page. And this poem. And guess what? Unetana tokef kedushat hayom ki hu nora ve'ayom uvo tinase malchutecha v'ikon b'chesek. 1 second. Didn't this all happen in Mainz? Rabbi Amnon from Magencia? I mean, I grew up in my uncle's here now. I grew up in my uncle's shul. And we used the Birnbaum Machzer, right? I never took a machzer from the shul. I took it from Astoria. Because the shul went defunct, so I took a machzer. You know? Bethel of Astoria. But remember the rabbi there in Bethel used to read this every time. Read the story of Rabbi Amnon. It was a legend and a gadah of sorts that Rabbi Amnon was being badgered by the church to baptize. And he said, no. It was all under threat of death. At one point, after being tortured, he says, give me 3 days to think about it. So fine, okay, think about it for 3 days. After 3 days, he says, no, I'm not going to baptize. So they cut off his arms, cut off his feet. And he was a dying person. And he felt remorse that he even said, give me 3 days to think about it. Because that almost indicated, you know, maybe it's a good idea to baptize. So he felt bad that he let on that maybe there's a chance he's going to baptize. So he felt this was Magili, right? God did the right thing, took my hands, took my feet. He was asked to be brought to Shul and Rosh Hashanah. And the Musaf, Chazar Sashatz, they're ready to say Kedusha, V'chein Lecha Talat Kedusha, And they're going to say, Kakatov Yad Viecha, Karazel Zevi Amar, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And 1 second, he wants to say something. And he starts saying this in Tana Tokif. And he dies. And if 3 days later, he appears in a dream to one of the classic Ashkenazi poets, Rabbi Klonumus, and he teaches him the Natana Tokif. And then it goes into the Machzor. This is the legend. How do we know it? By one of the great Rishonim of the end of the 12th century, Rabbi Yitzhak Or Zeruah. Very famous, by the way. And in the Or Zeruah, you have this whole story that we know today as Rabbi Amnon. Although, to be fair, in the Or Zeruah, it never says that Rabbi Amnon composes the tefillah. All it says is that he says whatever he says, and 3 days later, he teaches Rabbi Klonimus the Unatana Tokef. So it's clearly an Ashkenazi composition of the 11th century. Say one problem. If it's Ashkenazi composition of the 11th century, what exactly is it doing in the Cairo Gniza as part of the anthology of Yanai from the 6th century Eretz Israel? I mean, that really puts a damper on the authenticity of this famous tradition. So, Shulamit Elitzur suggests the following. That we also know, just to add to complication here, I'm going to go over time, but you'll enjoy this. To add complications, we found another piyut from Elazar Kalir, that 7th century Eretz Yisrael, that resembles the themes word, almost word for word from the Tana Tokef. I'll just read a few lines, you get the picture. Ki bo svarim nifrasim, ki yidaresh sefer yichasim, ume'elav yikare dvarim hanasim. That there are going to be books about who you are, and from these books it will be read, right? V'tiftach et sefa zichronot, ume'elav yikarei. The exact same two words. And then, in our Tana Tokef, it says, v'chotam yad kol adam bo, and every person will sign it, sign on the dotted line that it's true, by Kalir, v'nochach ishma asav yasim, and in front of every person, v'chotam yechotem yado, Lenegdo Yasim, he will place his signature. The exact same thing. Every person will sign. And he continues. Mi'chye, mi'amut, mi bikitzo, mi lo bikitzo. That's what we have. And in Kalir, Ze yityaches ulechayim yeyamer. Ze al yityaches ki kitzo nigmar. Ze bikitzo yigva viyamot. Ze belo bikitzo. The same idea, who will live and who will not live. Who will live a designed life and will pass away peacefully? The word gviya, vayigva vayamot, is used in Breshit for tzaddikim, Avraham Avinu and so on, Yitzchak, or will pass away not in the prescribed time because of sin. Mi ze barachash yashlim nafsho, Veze yuraga mi bahal magefa. Now, in our machzor, it says mi baraash umi ba magefa. But in the Cairo Gniza of the Natana Tokev, it doesn't say raash. You know what raash is? Raash is earthquake. Earthquakes. It says earthquakes. It says rachash. Rachash comes from the phrase lachash, which means die peacefully. Ze barachash yashlim will complete his life peacefully, and there were others who are going to, in turmoil, die from epidemic. Ze yuraga mi baal magefa. And then he goes on to mi b'mayim, mi b'esh, mi b'cherev, mi b'chaya, that we have. And in Kalir, it reads as follows. Ze yisafe b'tachshitei milchama, ki chuyav lecherev lenegdo milchama, ze bechaya ra'a yitaref, ki chuyav bevitzo leaso tarerev, ze ba'esh yisaref besaro, ki chuyav bechitum yad musaro, ze b'shibolet yishatef, in a flood you will be swept away, ki chuyav bechet'o ki erez likatef. Each phrase of War, Cherev, Chaya, Eish, fire, and water are all here, all four that you have in the Tana Tokev, with an explanation. Because you were guilty of A, B, C, and D. It comes with explanation here. And what are these four, if not the four mitot beitin, the four principal executions? So one is, we know this, skilas sreifa. Sreifa is burning, that's eish. Echenek, choking, is drowning. You choke, that's drowning asphyxiation here in this poem. Mi b'cherev is war, dying, falling in battle. Mi b'cherev. And b'chaya is skila. Chazal say, the skila being ripped apart ferociously by animals is the same as being tossed off the mountain and so on. What you have here is an explanation or an expansion of a poem that was sitting on Kalir's table in the 7th century. And it could only be Yonatan HaTokev that may have been authored by Yanai in the 6th century in Eretz Yisrael. How did it get to Ashkenaz? So Shulamit Elitzur points out, Amnon was never ever used as a name in Ashkenaz. We have no record in any of the sources of an Ashkenazi Amnon. Amnon was a positive, was a very popular name in northern Italy. And this can be seen by the sources. We know that Sfari tradition went from Baghdad, which is in Iraq today. There was no such thing as a country of Lebanon until 1921. It was Greater Syria. It went to the ports of either Tripoli or Tzor and Sidon, and went by boat to Alexandria, and went from Egypt, North Africa, proceeded west through Libya, Tunisia, and Morocco, and then over the Straits of Gibraltar to Spain. This is Spanish tradition. That's how it moved. How did Ashkenazi tradition move? It went from Eretz Yisrael to Italy, and from Italy, northbound to France and Germany. And that became Ashkenaz. So there's no question that there was movement here of this poem, and it became very much an Ashkenazi tradition. Because what I said earlier, that in Ashkenazi tradition, the tefillah factor can work even on a gzerah that has already been decreed, most probably hails from Eretz Yisrael. And just to add one more point, so Rabbi Professor Karnefogel, in my back and forth emailing with him on this little gadget, writes me that it was very common in Ashkenaz in the Middle Ages for tefillot to be introduced by dreams. This is not the only one where somebody dreamt a dream. So I have to write him. Many years ago when I was a rabbi in Ramot, I actually dreamt a whole Shabbos drasha. Dreamt the whole thing. And I remembered it. Got up in the morning, wrote it down, and gave it over in shul. Never told them where I got it from. An entire drasha, min ha-shamayim. So that proves that I'm Ashkenazi. That's what it proves. But these things can happen. Yeah, my wife said, any psychologist will say you were thinking about these ideas beforehand, you know, but in a dream it's supposed to be mishmash. Here, the mishmash became orderly. That was the chiddush, that it came out straight. It came out right. Nevertheless, in spite of the fact that this may jolt the known tradition of the history of Anatan HaTokev, Rav Amital Zichron Lebracha, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Alonshvot, once said, Kever Rachel in Bet Lechem, every scholar knows that there's hardly a chance that Rachel was buried there. Ask Rav Yoel Benun, tell you she was buried near Chizma in Eretz Binyamin, and some will say she was buried in Ramat HaGolan, called Beramah Nishma, because that was the direction of Am Yisrael going to Galut, and that's where Rachel Mevakal Baneha, they were going out to Bavel that way, that was the road, not south of Yerushalayim. There was no way they were going south of Yerushalayim to Beit Lechem. Rabbi Mital said, what's the difference? Am Yisrael, with its tears and prayers, have sanctified the place that Rachel is buried there for all practical purposes. It's Kever Rachel. Whether Shulamit Elitzur is correct or not, and I think she's on something here, makes not a, but a bit of a difference. Do you know why Natan HaTokev became so popular? Because it became a reflection of Mesirut Nefesh, of Kiddush Hashem, which is the core, it's the hallmark of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We are willing to do this. And I mentioned last year, And I'll say it again. When the Chazan starts Musafim Rosh Hashanah Kippur, Hineni He'ani Mimas. The word Hineni comes from the word Hineni. It's the proclamation of Avraham Avinu. It's the public proclamation. I am here, willing to do it. No different, by the way, than Leonard Cohen at the end of his life with his Hineni, which was very, very authentic. Very authentic. This is the Hineni of Yom Neroim. And when you have that willingness to express Hineni to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as expressing such a emotionally charged and religiously inspired in the Tana Tokev, it gives us the proper movement for proper tefillah on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. So it makes not one bit of a difference what the history was. It was Rav Amnon and his story, and it lives on and will continue to live on. Because it's these maaseh of Mesirut Nefesh. And we know that the Paitan at the end, he tells us that it's very, very, you read it and you realize how limited we are, how feeble we are. Adam yisadom yafar v'sofol yafar. You know, we came from dust, we're going back to dust. And we work hard. It's almost like getting back to Adam Rishon. And he had to work hard too. And it's compared to Mashul, Kecheres HaNishbar, Chatzir Yavesh, Tzitz Novel, Tzel Over, Anan Kala, Ruach Noshavet, Avak Poreach, Chachalom Ya'uf, seven different expressions of temporal experience. Right? The dream withers away, the wind just flies by, the passing cloud, the shade that passes, the shattered dish. Well, they all mean the same thing. It's all put up against the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'atu melech el chai v'kayayim. He's forever. Ein kitzva l'shnotecha v'ein keitz l'aruch yamecha. He's forever. We, mortal man. Why does he have to use seven different expressions? If you look at the page on the second part, we're not going to read all of them now because it's late. But you can see, source number 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. All of these phrases are found in Tanakh in some variation. Whether it's Kli Shavur, Yavesh Chatzir, Navel Tzitz, Tzel Over, Kala Anan, Avak Poreach, Chachalom Ya'uf, they're all there. And the poet very, very creatively borrows these phrases, where some of them in context talk about the temporariness of man. So why does he need seven different expressions to say the same thing? The answer, unfortunately, as we all know, people leave this world differently. Not everybody dies the same way. You know, you can have a fellow who's like this Ethiopian boy from Be'er Yaakov, who has a nice girlfriend, they plan to get engaged, whole life is in front of him, in 1 second he's gone. Kli Nishbar. This is a beautiful vessel that's useful, and it's shattered in one split second. That's Cheres HaNishbar. But then, unfortunately, there are those who, because of this illness, because of this, because of that, for all different reasons, that it's not instantaneous. But it's like if you go to a hotel sometimes, you know, you see the shade. You see the shade, it moves and moves and moves, but you don't see it moving minute to minute. If you're there for half an hour, you realize the shade has crept up more and more and more. And that's tzel over. It's very gradual. You don't even notice it on a day-to-day basis. Or anan kala, the dissipating cloud. You certainly don't see it, unless you have a camera that's on fast forward and you're seeing it again. But you don't see it day-to-day. And that's what the poet wanted to say. It's different. Some is from illness, ka'avak poreach, or what the Torah says by Shechin. Vayala avak al kol eretz Mitzrayim, vayala aretz v'al habehema l'shechin poreach. It's like an epidemic. Some people fall in epidemics. Some fall in different type of illnesses. They're all different ways that people are going to end their lives. And that's what the poet poetically wants to express here. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ein kitzva l'shnotecha. There's just no end, no end. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us also the gift of future. And the gift of future, I'll just say something very proudly, that Some of you know that. Some of you know that I'm proud of my family. You've heard me say it. Some of you caught wind of it. Caught wind of it. But I'm a firm believer that children are there to realize unfulfilled dreams of the parents. Right? In my case, so some of you also know that we're waiting for an announcement, and it came just last night. My son was accepted as an LL pilot last night. I was supposed to be the LL pilot. But all right, I'm happy that he's going to do it. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. So in our family, the year started off very, very well. Very, very well on this good note. And Kadosh Baruch Hu should give each and every one of us good tidings. So otovot, should be a shenat chayim v'shalom, should be gemar v'chatima tova, a year of bemet, peace, shalom, within the ranks of Am Yisrael, and across the borders and throughout the world. And God willing, we'll see the day of Hashem l'melech ha'kol ha'aretz for yomu Hashem echad u'shmo echad. Ms. Hashem, 3 weeks, we'll be here. Next week's Arab Yom Tov, Wednesday. Somebody, my friend sent me.